Good morning, everyone. This is WCBS Radio News. Kenneth Banghart reporting. Brought to you this morning by Horn and Hardart Automat Cafeterias, Restaurants, Retail Shops, and by Horn and Hardart Famous Automat Gilt Edge Coffee and Automatic Instant Coffee. Now at your local grocery. And now the news. The situation is not all black, but there have been many aspects of deterioration during the last year. Those words today from Defense Chief Robert McNamara, who wound up a five-day fact-finding mission in Vietnam. McNamara, before boarding a plane to return to Washington, declined to say what new recommendations he might make to President Johnson, although he did say, "This nation will fulfill our obligations and commitments to South Vietnam." This, of course, might mean new troop call-ups, and in Washington, Indiana Republican Congressman William Bray, a member of the House Armed Services Committee, said that such reserve activation might include elements of the 42nd Infantry Division here in New York and the 50th Armored Division in New Jersey. However, Bray said call-up of infantry personnel was much more likely than activation of any armored units. Several hours before McNamara and other officials got ready to leave Saigon, communist terrorists tried and failed to assassinate U.S. Ambassador Maxwell Taylor and a number of high Vietnamese officials. Saigon security police say they detected and disarmed a powerful fragmentary bomb outside a stadium where Taylor and the others were attending a rally. The device was found about 15 minutes before Taylor was to have walked into that area. We'll have a direct report from Saigon on the World News Roundup at 8 o'clock. In the war itself, the U.S. Coast Guard today was thrown into the fight. 8 heavily armored patrol boats were put on assignment to block further communist movements into South Vietnam by sea. The vessels are able to operate in waters too shallow for ships of the 7th Fleet stationed offshore. And in the air, U.S. planes today carried out the largest single leaflet-dropping raid on North Vietnam so far, showering some 3.5 million propaganda leaflets on 8 communist cities. Also in the Far East, Communist China's official news agency announced that the former vice president of Nationalist China in the late 40s and early 50s has defected to Peking. He was identified as 74-year-old Lee Sung-jen, a top nationalist leader under Chiang Kai-shek, whose forces were pushed off the Chinese mainland back in 1949. Lee has been in self-imposed exile in the United States ever since. Police apparently still have few leads in the kidnapping and murder of two young Queens children, Edmund Jr. and Alice Crimmins, who vanished from their home in Kew Gardens Hills just a week ago tonight. A body believed to be that of 5-year-old Edmund Crimmins Jr. was found yesterday on a heavily wooded slope near the World's Fair. The body of his 4-year-old sister had been found the day after the children disappeared from their mother's apartment. The little girl definitely was murdered, and police believe the boy was too, although an autopsy will be performed today to determine the exact cause of death. There's still no explanation of how the children were kidnapped or why. In politics, they're warming up the vocal cords. That story in a moment. Out of this world pie. Is it pie in the sky? No, right here in New York. Now, fresh fruit pies at Horn and Hardart, fresh cherry pie, and the season's first fresh blueberry pie. No question about it, Horn and Hardart takes the prize for pies. Who else goes to the trouble of baking pies of fresh-picked fruits and berries? They do it to bring you a true delicacy, the natural full-bloom flavor of the fruit. The cherries and blueberries are beauties. They're heaped between crusts of pastry so tender it fairly flakes away under your fork. Have a helping of fresh cherry pie or fresh blueberry pie at a Horn and Hardart Automat Cafeteria or Waitress Service restaurant. And take home these prize pies from a Horn and Hardart Less Work for Mother retail shop or our retail food sections and supermarkets. Time coming up to 11 minutes before 8 o'clock. Brief weather look right here. Sunny and dry and cool today. High about 80 and quite cool tonight. Low about 60. Right now, it's still a very cool 58 degrees. The major contenders in the Democratic race for City Hall trooped out together last night to make their bids for support from an East Side Democratic club. Paul Scrivain said that if elected, he'd expand the city's remedial education system. Abraham Beam said he'd find some way besides borrowing to balance the city's budget. And Paul O'Dwyer said neither would do either. Charging Scrivain and Beam were part of what he called the triumvirate at City Hall. O'Dwyer also said the city should have its own lobby in Washington, an idea also put forward by still another Democratic mayoralty candidate, William Ryan. Yesterday, Scrivain rounded out his ticket, naming Daniel Moynihan and Orrin Lehman as his running mates. Moynihan has been an assistant U.S. Labor Secretary. Lehman is a grandnephew of the late Herbert Lehman. Scrivain also narrowly won the endorsement of the Manhattan Democratic Organization, better known as Tammany Hall. And the man who used to run Tammany, Edward Kostikian, has been tapped to be Beam's campaign manager in the upcoming primary. The Republicans, not to be overshadowed, also completed their slate yesterday. Congressman John Lindsay naming City Housing Chief Milton Mullen to run for controller. Our reporter, Stephen Flanders, asked Lindsay how he could put a Wagner man on the ticket and then carry out an effective attack on the Wagner administration.
Well, what I've said all along is that I want to put together the most qualified team of all, the best people, and run a positive program on what I will propose to do for the city of New York to lift it, to give it a new look, and to restore its confidence in itself. And I also said I'd put together a nonpartisan team, and I'll reach out for talent wherever it is. And if I find some talent that has been in the Wagner administration of a professional kind, I'll take that.
John Lindsay talking to WCBS Radio News. Lindsay, by the way, today rejected a proposal from Abraham Beam that all the city's political candidates meet and discuss the police review board issue. It's now okay to call a rent strike in New York if you go about it in the right way. Companion laws signed by Governor Rockefeller make it legal to organize and carry out a tenant's revolt against their landlord if they can prove to a judge that unsafe conditions have existed at their building for 5 days or more. Rent payments would then be deposited with the court, which would use the money to hire repairmen. The other half of the two-part package allows a single tenant to simply stop paying his rent if the landlord refuses or fails to make needed repairs within a 6-month period. The second of the two laws goes into effect the September the 1st and is aimed at pressuring landlords to repair their buildings or face a cut in income. The other law is effective immediately. The United States today tossed 3 highly sensitive satellites into orbit around the Earth, 2 of them designed to detect nuclear explosions, the third to gather information from the Van Allen radiation belt. The 3 satellites, the Sentries weighing more than 500 pounds apiece, the other just 12 pounds, were launched piggyback style from Cape Kennedy. Scientists say that because of tricky maneuvers coming up tonight and tomorrow, it will be more than 24 hours before they find out if the launch was successful. The U.S. already has 4 satellites in orbit to check up on possible above-ground violations of the 1963 Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. Scientists in Pasadena, California say they expect now that the Mariner 4 satellite will send back a full complement of 21 close-up photos of Mars. The spacecraft has been steadily transmitting the shots back to Earth ever since it swept close to the red planet last week, and officials say a schedule adjustment in Mariner's recording equipment went off like clockwork last night. To wind up the news on the lighter side, Bob Platten, who likes to think up offbeat ways to cross the English Channel, uncorked another one today. He set out for France in a bottle. It's 15 feet long, made of steel, and powered by an outboard motor. Platten already has crossed the channel in a canoe, a barrel, and on a floating bedstead. But it looks like this trip in a bottle may cap his career. Sports in a moment. Never before have so many people called for so much of this deluxe quality ice cream at such a giant saving. That's the story of the big ice cream sale at Horn and Hardart retail food shops now in its second and final week. Save 11 cents on every pint. Save 26 cents on every quart. All flavors, vanilla, chocolate, strawberry, coffee, peach. Sale price, 39 cents a pint, regularly 50 cents. Vanilla butterscotch swirl, vanilla fudge swirl, butter pecan, peach melba. Sale price, 69 cents a quart, regularly 95 cents. And extra special to serve with your ice cream, butterloaf cake. Sale price, only 43 cents. Offer is good through this Saturday only. Stock your freezer now during the great ice cream sale at Horn and Hardart retail food shops. Step up to deluxe quality and save money on ice cream. In sports, it had to happen. The Mets finally lost again on a Monday. Not since the opening day have the wonders of Shea Stadium been defeated on a Monday, but they certainly were yesterday, 6-0 by Milwaukee, their 9th straight loss. The Yankees also lost 3-1 to Boston. The Yanks and the Red Sox play again this afternoon. Game time here on WCBS Radio, 1:55. Other scores, Minnesota 5, the Angels 2, Cleveland 5, Baltimore nothing, Kansas City 6, the White Sox 3, Washington 8, Detroit nothing. In the National League, Dodgers 8, Houston 3, Pittsburgh 3, Cincinnati 1, Philadelphia 5, St. Louis 2, and the Cubs 6, the Giants 2. Minnesota is still leading in the American League, and as I just mentioned, they won again yesterday, but the Twins are going to have to go it alone for the next few days. Their manager, Sam Mealy, has been fined $500, suspended for 5 days for pushing an umpire around during a game on Sunday. Former Mets pitcher Warren Spahn has found a new home with the San Francisco Giants. The news and sports brought to you this morning by Horn and Hardart Famous Automat Gilt Edge Coffee and Automatic Instant Coffee, now at your local grocery. And now the official weather report brought to you by Con Edison, serving New York City and Westchester with power for progress. At the present consumption rates, and if there is no break in the drought, 4 North Jersey reservoir systems will run out of water sometime in October. That depressing news comes from the acting director of the New Jersey Conservation Department's Water Policy Division, George Shanklin. The 4 watershed areas provide just more than half the water supplies for Hudson, Bergen, Essex, and Passaic counties, along with the city of Elizabeth in Union County. Shanklin and other officials don't exactly know what to do about the situation, although Governor Richard Hughes has labeled the whole area a sector of what he calls drought crisis. In a similar upstate New York area covering 10 counties, officials met yesterday in Albany to talk about joining in a mammoth rainmaking project, a $30,000 to $50,000 cloud seeding proposal that one professional rainmaker says could produce 20% more precipitation. No decision made on the plan, although back in New York City, officials have been highly skeptical of similar proposals for the metropolitan area. Now, the official forecast for New York City and vicinity, mostly sunny, dry, and cool both today and tomorrow, with a high both days about 80 or a bit higher. Clear and cool overnight, a low near 60 in town, of course lower in the suburbs. Thursday's outlook at the moment is also fair and somewhat warmer. Winds north to northwest at up to 15 miles an hour today, tonight, and tomorrow. Offshore from Cape May to Block Island, north to northwest winds today and tomorrow at about 10 to 20 knots both days. Winds somewhat less overnight, averaging about 10 knots. Visibility through tomorrow better than 5 miles. Right now here at the Weather Bureau in Midtown Manhattan, it is sunny. It's 59 degrees now, up 1 degree in the last hour. Humidity 62%, barometer 30.19 inches rising. Winds north at 6 miles an hour, and the THI also 59. The current temperature, as I said, 59 degrees. Remember, every day, the official weather report is brought to you by Con Edison, serving New York City and Westchester with power for progress. Checking on the top stories of the hour, McNamara, winding up Vietnamese tour, says situation has gotten worse in the last year. No leads reported in kidnap murders of 2 young Queens children. And U.S. launches 2 new satellites to detect nuclear explosions. This has been WCBS Radio News. Kenneth Banghart reporting. News editor Marvin Friedman. The World News Roundup will be heard in just a moment as WCBS continues to bring you the most comprehensive 30 minutes of radio news in New York.
The CBS World News Roundup is brought to you by Pan Am, the airline that leaves for Europe when you like, with up to 13 jet flights a day from New York this summer. And now, the news.
Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend in New York with the CBS World News Roundup. The 5-day fact-finding mission is over. Secretary of Defense McNamara, Ambassador-designate Henry Cabot Lodge, and General Wheeler, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, are on their way back to Washington from Vietnam. They are now preparing the recommendations that they will submit to President Johnson. Those recommendations are secret, of course, but their general nature can easily be surmised from the fairly gloomy comments that the Secretary of Defense made before leaving. Adam Rayfield reports that story from Saigon.
Secretary McNamara left Vietnam today after 5 hectic days of briefings and tours. At Saigon Airport, the Secretary said he found the situation overall more serious than on his last trip over a year ago. He noted substantial deterioration in some areas, with Viet Cong strength increased and their area of operations expanded. More destruction and more terrorism. And he concluded that he would recommend to President Johnson in a few days that the U.S. fulfill its commitment to support the people of Vietnam. In Saigon, police caught a terrorist planting a directional bomb near the National Stadium. It was aimed at the gate where U.S. Ambassador Maxwell Taylor and other diplomats were to leave a government ceremony for the 11th anniversary of Vietnam's Day of Shame, when the Geneva Conference divided the country in 2. Adam Rayfield, CBS News, Saigon.
85 miles north of Saigon today, communist guerrillas assaulted a U.S. Army Special Forces camp and caused heavy casualties among the Americans and South Vietnamese defenders. American Air Force planes made another heavy strike on targets in North Vietnam. That country's president, Ho Chi Minh, says his people are prepared to fight 20 years and more, if necessary, in order to defeat the American pirates, as he calls them. According to Radio Hanoi, Ho made that statement in an address marking the 11th anniversary of the Day of Shame, as Adam Rayfield noted that the Vietnamese call it, the Geneva Agreements on Indochina. Ho accused the United States of using all possible means to sabotage those agreements. "Ours is a heroic people," he said. "We have fought the Japanese fascists and defeated the French colonialists, and we will resolutely fight the American imperialists until their complete defeat." Another anti-American attack has materialized from an unexpected quarter. Lee Sung-ren, who was the vice president of Nationalist China for 6 years and its acting president for the last year that the Nationalist government was on the mainland. Ever since the communists took over the mainland in 1949, Lee had enjoyed asylum in the United States. But he reportedly left this country for Switzerland 5 days ago, and this morning he turned up at Peking Airport with his wife. They were greeted by Red Chinese Premier Zhou Enlai and a large group of other high communist officials. Now 74 years old, Lee is the most important Chinese to go over to the communists since Chiang Kai-shek was driven from the mainland. In an airport statement, Lee described the United States as our foreign enemy, accused it of committing a series of sordid crimes against the people of China and of the world in an attempt to isolate China and dominate the world. Especially since Lyndon Johnson came to office, Lee said, the United States has stepped up its evil doings. He says he decided to defect because he was impressed by Red China's two atomic tests and by what he calls the wise leadership of Mao Zedong. The Air Force today successfully launched two Sentry satellites from Cape Kennedy. Also launched aboard the same Atlas Agena rocket was a third satellite, a small radiation research laboratory. All three were to have been sent up yesterday, but mechanical troubles forced a postponement. There was no trouble today. The two Sentries went into a highly elliptical orbit, ranging from 132 miles to almost 70,000 miles above the Earth. This was a bit more elliptical than the Air Force had hoped, but even so, it says it's pleased. The Sentries are intended to become part of a system for detecting secret nuclear explosions in the atmosphere or as far as 200 million miles out in space. Some French newspapers this morning remain upset over another sort of American craft, one that didn't fly nearly as high, but apparently did fly where it should not have flown. From Paris, here's the report of Bernard Kalb.
The French press is displaying mixed emotions in reporting and editorializing on the significance of the alleged aerial espionage by the United States over France's atomic installation at Pierre Lot. The generally pro-de-Gaulle newspaper, Francois, carries a banner headline, U.S. spy plane took 175 pictures of Pierre Lot. The conservative Figaro publishes the story on the back page with a photograph of Pierre Lot, and editorially, the newspaper says the alleged U.S. photo reconnaissance mission is very logical, to get new photos to compare with old photos, to calculate when France would get the H-bomb, a fact that has very great importance in international politics. The communist Humanité charges that the Americans are using their bases to carry out espionage operations, but interestingly, La Nation, which is the organ of General de Gaulle's followers, plays down the story on its back page and calls the Pierre Lot affair a minor incident between old allies. The affair is closed. But observers here see the incident as tailor-made for General de Gaulle in his constant argument that France cannot place her full trust in the United States. Bernard Kalb, CBS News, Paris.
The Defense Department in Washington says only that there was no intent to overfly any prohibited area in France. Aside from that, the Pentagon has no comment, and neither does the State Department. The White House today opens a conference on a strictly domestic matter, some of the latter-day problems confronting American education. Stanley Levy reports from Washington.
Washington's intellectual level goes up a few notches today and tomorrow. 700 educators, including the ivyest of Ivy League college presidents, principals of crossroads and urban schools, and big thinkers from foundations, labor, and business are here for a White House conference on education. Much more than in other years and at other such gatherings, the emphasis will be on current problems: segregation, North and South, dropouts, who should manage the schools, how educational development should be assessed. And President Johnson, who taught school himself for a couple of years in Texas, will be seeking some answers to shape future legislation and to determine future federal policy. The government this year has leapt squarely into the middle of education. The general education bill already passed calls for more than $1.3 billion to go to primary and secondary schools. And some persons estimate the government's overall education bill at $5 billion a year. The conference won't make any recommendations as such, but the thrust of its thinking will be inescapable. Stanley Levy, CBS News, Washington.
The House of Representatives today is considered certain to approve the $1 billion military pay increase bill, providing an average pay boost of 10.7% for members of the armed forces. This is far more generous and more costly than the administration recommended. Debate on the bill was completed yesterday, but the final vote was put off until today, when a quorum call showed more than 100 congressmen absent. Some members were in Illinois attending funeral services for Adlai Stevenson. House leaders delayed the roll call vote in order to protect absentees who want to go on record in support of the bill. Another measure disliked by the administration, the so-called Cold War GI Bill of Rights, was passed yesterday in the Senate by a roll call vote of 69-17. But approval in the House may not come so quickly. Chairman Olin Teague of the Veterans Committee says any veterans benefits bill passed now should be given serious thought. "We may never have another declared war," said Teague, "and what we pass this time may have to last indefinitely. So I am not going to be stampeded."